Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Hello, and welcome to the Betches Up podcast. It's Amanda here. Instead of recording a normal episode today, we're going to share an episode of a podcast called At Betches. It's another Betches podcast where members of the Betches office discuss pop culture and current events. This week, I had the privilege of sitting in on a conversation with a few of the women of color in the office about how they're feeling about this moment in history, their own experiences navigating their racial identity throughout their lives, and what they want the people in their lives to know and to be doing to practice anti-racism and show that you're allies. It was a really, really amazing conversation, and I was so lucky to be a part of it, so I hope you give it a listen.
Betches Media presents.
Like beer? I don't know if you do.
Okay.
You like beer, Senator, or not?
Mom, I want a vape.
Nude pictures of Trump.
Come on now.
Don't mess with me.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
How dare you?
Hey guys, and welcome to the At Betches Podcast. I am Kay, or Kay York City, whatever you feel like calling me today. I'm the senior social media manager here at Betches, and I also run the Bachelor Instagram, and I'm on the Bachelor podcast.
Hey everyone, my name's Dana. I'm the community manager at Betches, so basically the office manager, resident dog wrangler, all that fun stuff. And I also run the When's Happy Hour account.
Hi, I'm Amanda Duberman. I'm the editorial director of Betches Sup. I run the Betches Sup Instagram and help produce the podcast and handle the Twitter.
And this is both of your first times on At Betches, I think?
I did one episode.
I did an episode
with Sean and Dylan, and it was bizarre. I was like, why am I talking to two dudes for an hour?
This is my first anything ever, so
first podcast.
You're welcome
to the realm.
What an arrival, Dana.
What an arrival. But yeah, Amanda, I want you to, like, you said you run the At Betches Sup, and first of all, if you guys aren't following the Betches Sup, you have to be, because we're going to be having a pretty intense conversation right now, and Amanda has so much information that she's putting out on the Betches Sup Instagram account that you guys should definitely be looking into and reading at the moment, for sure.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. Yeah, Betches Sup is a politics vertical and platform that we have here at Betches. But we have a very strong perspective about things that we have never made any mistakes about. So obviously right now we're really working that angle. I am a white woman. I think that's important to state. I'm here mainly today to listen to you guys. I wanted to provide a little bit of the political context. I'm sure everyone listening is, if you've looked outside, probably you know what's going on in this country. It hasn't been this quiet in the streets since like the early days of Corona, because they had a curfew last night. So there weren't as many people out, but this is the,
but it was like 8 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah. And they didn't let any, that's why I was, cause they didn't let any like non-essential or law enforcement traffic like below 96th Street, which is most of Manhattan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Usually it's just the subway that's not going below or above 96th Street.
Exactly. It actually isn't. Yeah. As I was saying, that it actually isn't most of Manhattan. That's actually a misconception, because Manhattan is much bigger, but we tend to ignore the top half of it, which,
oh, yeah,
believe it or not, I don't know, might have something to do with race.
I live in Harlem. I am in the top half of Manhattan. And to be honest, with all of the protests and things that are going on right now, first of all, I also want to say, if you don't know already, I am a biracial female. I have a black dad, a white mom, and this has affected me in different ways for sure. But speaking about the Harlem area in general, I was fully prepared for it to be way more intense up here.
Protests?
Yes. There have been protests, but I mean, you have to go find them, and it's nothing that you've been seeing, which obviously in the media, all you've been seeing right now are, you know, the craziest things, not the normal peaceful protests. But it's really been quite quiet up here, and most of the stuff is happening downtown and in Brooklyn.
I think think there's been an effort on behalf of the organizers of these protests to keep them away from communities of color because of the destruction that has happened.
Yes.
Like, if you're going to have a protest where some people are co-opting it and looting and violence, go to fucking Wall Street. Don't go to Harlem. Like,
facts.
Right.
But I guess we'll run briefly through what's been going on and why. So last night was the 8th night of protests in cities across the country. Protesters are primarily demanding justice for George Floyd, who was murdered by police officers last Monday on Memorial Day. This, sadly, was broadcast across the nation. A lot of us have seen the really disturbing images, and this sort of prompted this large-scale protest for racial justice, but it is in the background of a pandemic that has disproportionately killed Black and Brown people, that has disproportionately left Black and Brown people out of work, in a country that is already disproportionately sickened by chronic diseases because of systemic racism, in a country where already in the past several months we heard about two really high-profile killings, one of Ahmaud Arbery, a Georgia man who was killed by two white people when he was jogging, and Breonna Taylor, who was shot eight times in her home by police. These things are obviously really painful to hear about, I'm sure, for both of you, and they're things that it must be hard to balance because it's like important to that this information is out here, and it seems like how public George Floyd's final moments were seems to have really activated something in people. It really sucks that it took that, and these images are being sort of broadcast, and that's where we're at today. We're at a place where a lot of people are posting some black squares and trying to read books for the first time, I guess. How are you guys feeling?
I honestly have been asking myself that every single day, and every single day I can't put it into words in the sense that it's so many different emotions at one time. I'm just, first of all, exhausted in every way that you can be exhausted. And also, let me state, because I've never been here before, I've never been on a podcast, I'm also a biracial Black woman, half Black, half Puerto Rican. Okay. But I am exhausted in the sense that having to see that some people who I've grown up with, who I've been friends with for years and years and years, be absolutely just, you know, in the background. They don't want to say anything. They don't want to, you know, stir up any kind of trouble or conflict on their own page or whatever. I'm like, well, how can you do that at the same time that you are claiming to like care about me? Oh, you value my friendship, all this stuff. So just exhausting in that way. And sometimes I find myself talking about it and not even realizing I'm like crying talking about stuff because it's just like numbing at this point, which is very disappointing. But
I know what you mean, because one of the things that I've noticed personally, I don't know if you guys have seen this video yet, but I mentioned this on the Bachelor podcast, but on E! News, Nina Parker did an interview with like Morgan Stewart. And one of the things that she said, which really rang out to me and goes off of what you just said, Dana, was that our friends, not all of them, but there are people that are being silent about this whole thing. And I almost being silent could possibly be worse. Like, I'd rather you just like say you're all lives matter and be done with it so I can like move on, instead of having you not say anything. And one of the things that Nina said in this interview was that she goes, the people that hate me are loud as fuck, you know? So yep. Like you think about, okay, so why aren't the people that quote unquote love me, that quote unquote are my friends, why aren't they being loud, like equally as loud? Because anger will always be louder than, you know, the kind words. You could have 100 nice comments, but you have like one negative one and you're like losing your mind. So why can't we transfer that anger with our friends and our allies and our supporters and make that just as loud for the love for us? And it's crazy seeing the people who haven't said anything. That has been the most hurtful.
It definitely. And I feel like also I have every day tried to post something that isn't necessarily like attacking anyone for how they're going about doing anything, but trying to be, you know, a good nugget of information about what you can do to help, or you know, anything like that, anything that can be beneficial for Black and non-Black people who follow me alike. But at one point over the weekend, I think I posted something about exactly what we're saying about that Martin Luther King quote everyone is sharing about the silence of your friends is what you're going to remember. And I put that and added my own little, you know, blurb about how it affected me and what I felt about it. And then, like clockwork, as soon as I did that, a bunch of people come flooding and saying stuff. And like, I not that I don't appreciate the sentiment, I don't appreciate the intention now, because it is coming from some of those people who I thought that we had this great relationship, and now you're not saying anything, you haven't even like reached out to me. But I'm not going to forget that it took me saying something for you to do it.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Do you guys think that has anything to do with the fact that you are both biracial women? Do you think that people underestimate, just because maybe they don't see how you experience the world sometimes and make assumptions about how you do? Do you think that part gets like erased sometimes and maybe people just didn't? I mean, it's not acceptable that people didn't think you wanted to hear that reassurance until you put out into the world that you did. Like, they already knew you were Black. But do you think that factors into how people are approaching you about it?
Well, personally, I think people didn't, I mean, people knew that I was biracial. That's not really like a secret. I mean, if you didn't, then I mean, whatever. But I think they didn't know how to approach it because they didn't know how I was going to react to it. And one of the things that, and they also didn't know like what I was going through, because I haven't really talked about that kind of stuff. Dane, I know that you and I have sort of bonded over this as well. So I want to hear what you have to say after this. But like, one thing that I felt growing up is like, so I had, you know, a Black dad and a white mom, and my sister. So I have a younger sister who looks completely Caucasian. I mean, you would never know that we have the same parents. She's like white skin, green eyes. You would never know that we have the same parents, but we would go out to eat. And the waiter would be like, do you guys need separate checks? Thinking I'm with my dad and my mom is with my sister. Like something so small, but it would make you feel like weird, or like my mom picking me up from school and we don't look the same. And like people like looking at or asking questions. But like the biggest thing for me was not being able to feel like I fit in anywhere, because I was never really Black enough, or like I still wasn't like the white girls. Like I didn't have the pretty hair and all of, like, I was very different. I mean, even to this day, I remember I posted this photo of myself yesterday with like, I was like 12, and that was the first day I got my hair straightened ever. And I remember begging her, because I wanted to have like the flowy long hair so I could put it up in a ponytail, because I was sick of like my kinky curly hair. And to me, that was beauty. And here I am at 31, still straightening my hair, convinced that this is what I should look like. And I mean, it's just hair, but it has such a deep meaning, deep seated meaning to me that people don't think about. And people forget.
Right. And that's obviously in the context of, that just doesn't come out of because Kay likes it better that way. It comes in a broader context, I'm sure, of like, literally until recently, you can like ask Black women in a place of work to straighten their hair. Like, oh, it's an issue.
That's so messed up. Yeah. Even just the hair thing. I honestly, I don't even know how to describe my hair. It's like very long and curly when it's wet, and it's just shrinkage.
Dana and I have sent pictures back and forth of our quarantine hair so many times.
It's, yeah,
I'm like,
it's,
we're losing it, guys. Like, it's done.
But after the longest time, the easiest way was just to like braided pigtails. Every morning my mom would sit me down, do my hair, I'm off. And it came to a point too when I was in like middle school and all my friends are, you know, doing all these cute things with their hair or whatever. Even other Black girls in my class had their hair straightened or like multiple braids or anything. And I'm here with these two pigtails, 13 years old. I'm like, well, what the hell? I don't want this. So right. I also like beg my mom to let me straighten. And she's like, okay, sure. And I, at this point in my life, I'm only 23, but I've destroyed my curl pattern. I'm trying to wean back into it, but it's like.
You sort of have to do a chop. If you want to get those, I would never be able to get my real curls back. Even like, so my hair's probably grown out a couple inches. You can't tell right now because I've like fully straightened it. But when I get out of the shower, it's like, and then it's straight. It's like crazy. But to get my curls back to what they were, my younger sister did this because she would relax her hair as well. Like her and I have the same type of hair, but just like to get it back to that, you have to make a big cut and then go grow it out from there on out. And it's really hard to feel like that because you don't feel, I mean, I didn't feel pretty, and that's the whole thing of it. I wanted to feel pretty. And to me, that wasn't it.
Right. And even just to sort of circle it back to the original point, I grew up in like predominantly white situations as far as school activities. I went to a summer camp at the Jewish Community Center. So like I was constantly surrounded by white people. And so it's a matter of like mob mentality in a sense of you want to fit in, you don't want people to like call you out on any differences. Or even myself, my mom tells me this, when I was really young, I was a lot lighter and my eyes are kind of, you know, typically what you would expect like an Asian person's eyes to look like. And so people are like, oh, let's see me with my mom, again, who's Puerto Rican, and they'd be like, oh, was her dad like, she's so beautiful, what is he like from, you know, some part of Asia or something. Just like, no, she like, he's not. But it's a matter of people are like, oh, sort of, if they didn't see me in the summertime when I was really dark and really tanned, then it was like a, oh, what? Right. We don't even have enough time to get into the like, what are you conversation, because that's, I would just absolutely lose the plot. But that in itself is just a whole nother problem.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
As you guys were speaking about your backgrounds, you mentioned that both of your fathers are Black, right?
Yeah.
I feel like obviously what we're focused on at Betches too is really amplifying the stories about Black women who are also killed by police. But I think that it's very dangerous for Black men when they have interactions with police. When did you in your life maybe realize that was a thing that, you know, when your father, like a Black man is your father, and when they are encountered by a police officer, their life is at risk. Is that something that you were aware of? Is that something that felt present in your life?
To be honest, for me personally, my dad is very like, I mean, suburban dad, different. Like, I have never personally been in that situation with my father, but my dad has 5 or 6 brothers who have been in those situations multiple times. One of them, I've definitely seen all of that happen. So I haven't seen it with my father personally, no, but it's more of the, like I said, it's more of the microaggressions that have taken more of a toll on our life. Like the, do you guys need separate checks? Is he, you look like your dad. It's like, actually, I look identical to my mother. My dad and I just have the same color skin. And same with my sister. My sister looks, I mean, to a T like my father. They're twins, except they have different color skin. But it's like small things like that where I've really suffered with it. And Amanda, side note, I remember you mentioned I think it was yesterday, the day before, we were talking about different products we could do for shop that we could give the 100% proceeds to, like, what can we make? What can we do? And it was suggested that we do face masks, but you have made a really amazing point that giving face masks to, like, if a Black man were to wear a face mask, you can't see facial expressions. So automatically, it puts them in danger, which I did not think about.
Somebody had to tell me that. Yeah.
And I think that's such a good point because, you know, you wouldn't think that with anybody else, like with the white guy or with probably even me, you wouldn't think that, but the second it's a black man, you're automatically, you feel weird about it, or you feel like they could be aggressive. So I don't know. Dana, what about you?
I also fortunately haven't been like directly present if any of that has happened, but, and I honestly can't really pinpoint the first time that I sort of was made aware of it on that more broad spectrum of, as far as like differing that from my own experiences with like racism in general, never mind with police and stuff. Like I can vividly remember that memory for myself, but I feel like it was just sort of mixed in with everything else, like talking about it, learning about it. You need to be aware of this, this, and this. This is different for us than it is for white people. But I know that he like has dealt with it for sure. And I know that he's told me, he's like, if, excuse me, if, you know, I can't even tell you all the experiences if I tried, because it's so many. He was down at the Million Man March. So that alone, you can imagine how many potential interactions could have happened there. Mm-hmm. But then I remember one time recently, it actually might've been last summer, I came home to my childhood home and police were outside of my house, and I came from the garage and my stomach dropped. I was like, what could you possibly be here for? Like, what is going on? It ended up like something had tripped my alarm, but it was terrifying. It's upsetting that that is immediately what I went from, like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Is my dad home? Like, what's going on? Why are they here? Who, you know, what is going to come of this? And I wasn't like, oh, someone must have broken into our house, which didn't happen, but like something must have happened with the alarm. Like that didn't even come to mind.
Yeah. One thing that I'm curious of both of your guys' opinions and thoughts on this. So we talked about earlier this morning about white fatigue. Is that what that and sort of, you know, when is this like, when are these protests going to end? Like, when is it going to be appropriate for me to start posting again? Like influencer stuff, like how the, like when you can start going back to quote unquote normal when all of this is, I mean, it's never going to be done, but you know what I mean? Like, I wonder what's going to be like, how this is all going to pan out. Like, are people just making these efforts right now because it's right now? Or is it going to keep going? Like, I'm interested to see if people will sort of put their money where their mouth is and, like, you know, follow through.
Yeah, my whole thing with that too is I'm worried that a lot of people are sort of just, you know, waiting on the sidelines, waiting to, like, for that moment when they can, like you said, go back to normal, go back to business as usual. But in the same take, it's like, how can you do that when even though, like you said, this is never really going to be done until something is actually done about it, like an actual change is made about it. But how can you say all that and do all that when even in the midst of some of these peaceful protests, I can tell you firsthand, one of my friends knows a black girl who was at a protest in our state, and they arrested her mother. They arrested her black friend's mother for having an unregistered vehicle. And my friend was like, that's absolutely them abusing the power. And that's absolutely because she was black, because my dad, who is white, this is my friend saying this, he has been pulled over 3 separate times for not having registered his car. That's just because he's lazy, but he's never been arrested for it. He's never been threatened to be arrested for it. He's never gotten his car towed. So how can you say that? How can you say that you're waiting for business to go back to normal when, again, and this is just talking about like cars and driving while black and all that, but my best friend as well got pulled over once in her life, but the one time that she did, she texted her mom. She said, I got pulled over. I'm recording it, but I love you so much. That is not something that a white person would do. That would not be your first instinct for you to text your parent that you might not ever see again, that you love them.
Yeah, right. I think that on the one hand, when things that are worth doing, when they acquire like a performative aspect, sometimes it's good when a lot of people feel like they will get some clout or good faith from people by sharing it. And yeah, sometimes it is just the sharing that is needed. Sometimes awareness raising can make a really big impact. But I get nervous about this because the actions that people need to take are, they're not like sexy, bright, shiny things. They're things like making sure you go vote for mayor. Like, as much as great as it is to donate to these bail funds, and I think people should keep doing that, we're already paying people to keep us safe. That's our taxes. We're already paying for these people to not do their jobs. Like, it's already out there. We can, it's free. It's, well, it's not free to vote, really. People are trying to keep people from voting all over the place. But yeah, it's like those things that are not sexy and fun to talk about. I worry that people will get tired of, and these are things that actually Black activists know and have been doing, and they know this is how the system works. A lot of good things that white people have in life from their government are because of the work of Black people too. Pretty much any good idea, like, it is nerve-wracking. Just, yeah, because the thing is, it's like, so actually this news just broke that they arrested every officer involved with George Floyd's death, and they bumped up the charges for Derek Chauvin, who is the man who is directly seen kneeling on his neck, to second-degree murder. Previously, it was third-degree murder, which suggested that he didn't know what he was doing could end George Floyd's life, which he very clearly knew. George Floyd was telling him that he was dying. So,
right.
I mean, like we're saying, that happened. That's because people have been in the streets. Like, they can't ignore, when you look at big social movements, like, this moment is as big in some ways in terms of people out there as 1968, when some things did change. And it matters. Like, if you're white body out there does matter. Everyone's making their own calculations because it's a pandemic. But like, if you haven't seen yet, there are plenty of images of, like, when these protests escalate, if you're white, you got to run to the front because they're not going to mess with you. I mean, it's shocking to see during this protest. Like, I knew that they would probably beat up on white people. I didn't expect that they would do the exact brutality, racialized brutality they're being accused of on camera during protests against police brutality. Right. But if you're comfortable going to these protests, like, your literal body makes it safer.
And yeah, I don't know if I sent you this video, Amanda, but earlier I sent Kay something of somewhere just in Philly, and two things quickly. Some town near Philly, a group of white men were walking down the street like something out of The Purge. They're walking out down swinging baseball bats around, golf clubs, anything that can be used as a weapon.
I was thinking about that when you were talking about the people that are saying nothing. Those are, if you say nothing, well, there are white guys with baseball bats. So,
right. And my friend is there now, and she's like, there are some people, some just lay people, not even police, out there with assault rifles, like, on rooftops, and nothing's being done about this. She said, and she even read in a local paper that a Black man who got beat up with one of the baseball bats got arrested, but not the people with them.
That's my this guilt that I hold over myself, that I've held this entire time, that I feel like I have not been to the protest, but it's genuinely because I am, like, paralyzed with fear of the virus, which, I mean, if you guys know, I've probably been out of my apartment 5 times total because I've been so scared of the virus. And then on top of this, I just, like, I can only expect the worst, which the media is not helping. But all I can think about is, like, what if somebody shows up with a gun and there's an active shooter, and this, and, like, I physically, it makes me so nervous, and I'm living with all of this guilt because I'm not out there. So I'm trying to tell myself it's okay because I'm doing this, you know, virtual protesting, and I'm sharing this information. I'm putting I have a tremendous amount of guilt with me right now, over not being outside, but I mean, I don't even know what else to say.
I think that makes it all the more important for people that do feel a sense of safety, that to get out there, because it matters. And especially if you're an ally and you're white, and, like, it's not nothing. I've also weighed it too, because when I've gone, everybody is masked. But as we said at the start of this pandemic is disproportionately killing Black people because of systemic failures in our healthcare system that discriminate against people of color that have been there for decades. Like, it's not like Black people just got, like, got a bad roll of the dice with coronavirus. Yeah, that's not what's happening.
That's not it.
Yeah. But I think like what has been hurting to me when I also am a little bit unsure is like there's plenty of people out there.
Like, I know.
Their voices are being heard and change is happening. I mean, I think this is a big moment. And like we were saying, like we'll continue to share the work that's not always the sexiest to do. But I think we just hope that by like putting it in front of people's eyes and making it easy. I mean, today, Kay, we posted this thing where literally you just swipe up and the email is already written for you. It's in your Gmail. You just send it.
And so many people have shared that. To the point where we were going to do the George Floyd one as well, and they weren't even accepting any more emails, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because, it's the flooding that matters. It's like, you really have to flood it. That does matter.
Definitely. Definitely. And my one last thing I wanted to bring up too, is about that whole thing that we were talking about earlier, Amanda, the George Floyd challenge, which is just, it's ridiculous. If you haven't seen it, it's a bunch of, and I think it was all men, a bunch of white men who were kneeling on the necks of their friends or whatever to like trivialize what happened to George Floyd. And it's ridiculous. And people are, again, which is just showing the positive power that social media can have. People are like zooming in on their faces, finding their accounts and like contacting their place of employment, all this stuff, trying to make sure that they're held accountable. But my whole thing is too, people like some people who are, you know, just problematic are like, well, now they've lost their jobs and all this. And it's like, they didn't care. Those people didn't care. The Park Karen, Amy Cooper and Park Karen 2, Svetlana, whatever, the sequel. That Complex called it the sequel.
Yeah, we're writing that up today.
They didn't care about what was going to happen to the Black person that they were trying to, you know, induce their privilege to have something happen to them. So why should I care that they are facing the consequences of their own choice?
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
Before we wrap up, I was wondering if you both could share, like, as a white ally, I always love hearing microaggressions I may not know about. I've tried to educate myself as much as I can, but I think that it's important for people to hear, like, what's the most annoying microaggression you get that's maybe in your place of work or from friends? And microaggressions, maybe we should define them.
Yeah.
Or sort of just go ahead, Kay.
I can give you, give me 1 second and I can.
She's like, I'm ready. Do you have a notes app? Are you looking at your phone?
I also have notes.
We ready.
No.
Okay. So the term microaggression is used by, was used by Columbia professor Daryl Sue to refer to brief and commonplace daily verbal behavioral or environmental, basically saying shit like, where are you from? Oh, you're pretty for a Black girl. Like stuff that you don't think is hostile or racist or negative, but actually is. It doesn't seem like it is. Like it's not with that intention, but stuff that people say, like Amanda, you just asked. So my most annoying one is when girls go out and they're tanning, they're like, oh my God, I'm darker than you. And I'm like... First of all, it's
I've
a very
seen that
different
so many
dark.
Times.
Like you're orange and I am brown. So let's just say that, but that's my favorite one.
It's Donald Trump has definitely said that to somebody.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like yeah. It's, I mean, that one to me is the most irritating, because I'm sure Dana, you get this as well, because we are lighter skinned. Yes, it is possible that you have a different hue or a hue close to mine, but it's not something you should be comparing.
Ever. Yes.
Nobody is going to, a cop isn't going to mistake you for an African American.
Right.
If he pulls you over. And so unless, no, you're not darker than me.
And unless you want to be treated like my brown skin tone, do not say you are.
Don't try and claim it. Take all that comes unless with it.
Take everything or take nothing. So you guys don't say that. Don't ever compare your skin tone to a black person, a mixed person, anybody of color. Not just chill.
Like, be tan and that's it. Just be and tan. Like get up. Tan and shut up. Yes, I have gotten that one. I've gotten the whole, in many different forms of, oh, beautiful, like beautiful black girl. You're so beautiful for a black girl. I'm like, well, I gotta go. First of all, gotta.
That there's is the exit. Wild.
That one, and then just comments about which may not have been true for this podcast. We'll see about how well spoken that I am, because I used to do like performing arts and a bunch of different shows, and I was a tour guide at school. I did lots of public speaking. I took like broadcast classes, all those things. So that in itself, I'm like, well. What am I? Enlighten me on what I'm supposed to sound like.
Right. Like, you don't sound like a black girl.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially if you're over the phone. And you can just tell that they're surprised that you look like that, even if they don't say anything.
I'm going to read just a few more because I have a few written down.
I want to hear them all. If you have multiple, this is important information.
Mm-hmm. So here's some that we have written down. Where are you from? Or you're really pretty for a black girl, guy, whatever. Oh, wow, you don't have an accent. You talk like a white girl. I don't see color. Can I touch your hair?
Oh, no.
Is that your real hair?
My understanding is that just don't mention hair. Just don't comment on it.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about it.
If you got a haircut, you like your new haircut. I don't need to tell you.
Yeah. We don't need to talk about that. Or your name is so hard to pronounce. Can I call you so-and-so instead? Everyone has the same opportunities if you work hard enough. Why are you so angry? Can't you talk about this more calmly? Telling people of color that they are loud.
Yeah.
Like all of these are assuming if someone is Asian that they're Chinese. Like you can't just leave it alone unless they tell you specifically. We don't need to bring that up, but all of these are like you look so exotic, which people use all the time, and it doesn't seem like it's offensive, but it is. Like
I one time had someone which I think was just a general them being dumb, but at one point I was speaking to one of my friends about like Puerto Rico and stuff because her full family is from there, so we were just speaking about it and talking about like being Puerto Rican and all this stuff and how I don't speak Spanish as well as she does because my mom like doesn't speak it around the house and whatever. But then later on I come to find out that she was speaking to another one of our friends about it, about like our conversation and everything, and he's white. And he basically came in like, oh, I don't know why it came up. I don't care why it came up, whatever. But something about me being black as well came up. And he's like, no, she's not. Like, no, she's not black. And my friend said, what do you, huh? And she's like, she told me that she's Puerto Rican. She goes, you know that people can be
two different things.
Multiple things, right?
Yeah.
Like, but she told me that she's Puerto Rican. And then he said that didn't you tell me that? I said, but when did I say that I wasn't black?
Right. It's almost it's almost like if somebody were to say to me, it's like, oh, Amanda's Jewish. She told me she was white.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. That's
question
fine.
Mark.
Also you never said that you were black. Like,
why didn't you tell me?
When does that Is that an admission?
Have you used your eyeballs? Because at that point, like, I'm dark enough. You might be a little confused. Like, some people have thought that I was maybe Indian or something like that, but you...
Sometimes people don't know and they just think I'm a really tan white girl. That is so true. That has happened. Countless times.
But at the root of it, it's like, why do you care so much? Why does it matter?
If you don't see color, quote unquote, then what's good? But yeah, so those are microaggressions for now all of you guys know. I think those are really important and they you don't think about them and we know they're not meant to be offensive. Like,
yeah, but they, I mean, they prick. Like,
yeah, I'm like,
I don't go through my day getting pricked all day by those things that then probably feel really exhausting by the end of the day.
Yeah.
Especially that, and just last thing about these, especially is at that you look pretty for, you're so pretty for a black girl or whatever. Even, first of all, just that in itself is one of the ones that's more prominently like, why did you need to add that little thing at the end? But then that's something that is in your head. If you want to, like, say you see a white boy you think is attractive, that's in the back of your head. You're like, well, I just put myself in the eye. Well, is he, like, going to have a problem that I'm black? Is he going to point that out? Is he racist?
Mm-hmm.
If I try and approach him, and then that's something that's always in the back of your head, like, well, is he gonna think like I'm pretty because I'm like a lighter skinned black girl?
Oh, I think about that all the time. I automatically assume if a white guy is into me, it's like a kink. Like, or like, it's like they're fetish? Into that type of girl. Like, oh yeah, I'm into dark skin girls, or I'm into I automatically assume that. I never obviously say anything.
Yeah. All these things that you guys are saying are like part of why these protests are happening. It's like the shit that you guys have to deal with all the time and the weight of it. Like, we need to transfer some of that weight to white people. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's, as you guys are saying this, the idea of anti-racism is becoming a little bit clearer to me because I'm conceiving of it as like, how can I more outwardly project that I do not have those thoughts so that you don't have to spend your time and energy like wondering? I think that's wondering, why it's so valuable to put out there what you're feeling and to say that you believe in equality and racial justice so that the black people and the people of color in your life don't have to like wonder and have the weight of that constantly. Like, we need to share this burden. It's obviously not fucking fair.
We all have to be in, like, at this point, we all have to be in this together. I've gotten a lot of messages from people being like, I know you don't know me, but I wanted to say, like, I'm sorry and thank you for sharing your story. And I've been messaging these people back. I'm like, we are no longer strangers. At this point, we have to be in this together. I appreciate you reaching out. Like, we have to do this together. Otherwise, nothing is going to happen. We can't be strangers any longer. We have to just do this together. And that's what it is.
Yeah, you actually saying that earlier in the week as we were talking about how we might approach this podcast made me reach out to people that I was uncertain whether they wanted to hear from me. But hearing you say that it was meaningful and important. Being able to hear you say that, I was able to then like, no, Amanda, this isn't about you. Like, reach out. And who cares if it's weird, if they think it's weird, who cares? No. What if they had thought it was nice? Then I would rather them have that. So I ended up reaching out to people I was uncertain about. And I'm really glad I did.
No, it means a lot. And just like, and I've been saying, not that anybody needs praise for doing like a basic human task of like reaching out and making sure people are okay. But I do want my friends, and I want you to know, and I want, you know, other people who have been making these efforts to know that, like, I see it, I hear it, like, I appreciate it. And because I think that is also important. I think it's important to know that, to reiterate, like I said to you yesterday or today, I was like, I wanted to say it again, thank you for everything that you're doing.
Every day.
Because I think it's important because you also have been educating me on a lot of stuff that I'm not fully, you know, versed on the political aspect of it. So like, you having that knowledge helps me personally. Yeah. And together we are able to do this, and that's what it has to be.
Right. And claps. I think it's important too to not just stop at that. Like, obviously, I'm sure the same goes for you, for or any, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I know I appreciate when people are reaching out. I'm like, okay, great, awesome. What else? Don't just stop with making sure that you're being there to support me or whatever, you know, Black people you have in your life. Take it, expand on that. Do something.
Yes, and.
Yeah. Yes, and.
Yes, and.
Yeah. Like, not, I'm sorry you're carrying something heavy, but what can I take? What can I carry?
Right.
Oh, this was such a great episode, you guys. I loved this.
You guys did so good. This was great.
All right. Thank you guys again for joining us on the At Betches podcast. We have Amanda here who runs the SUP, Dana, When's Happy Hour. I'm on The Bachelor. We're all going to be talking about this a lot.
We got range.
We got range. We're hitting all angles right now. So make sure you're following all those accounts and stay informed and keep up with the Betches SUP Instagram account, because they will have all of the information on how you can help, how to educate yourself, and to stay woke as fuck during this time. So we will see you guys next time, and stay safe.
The Betches SUP podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman. Our podcast managers are Mike Coscarelli and Sean Kilby. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Artwork by Brittany Levine. The SUP is created by Sammy Fishbein. Be sure to follow us at Betches_SUP on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and send your emails to sup@betches.com.
Betches.